Questioning Paul Chapter 12 Part 2.
With this in mind, I've taken the liberty of color-coding the first chapter of CHABAQUWQ, with burgundy pointing to Shawul and blue addressing Babylon. I suspect that you will enjoy the specificity of God as he lowers his sights and takes direct aim at the world's single most hideous person. Even the prophet's name, CHABAQUWQ, embrace this, is telling when considered next to Shawul, question him.
The prophetic pronouncement which beneficially was received as a vision and revelation by CHABAQUWQ, embrace this, the prophet who proclaims the message of God regarding future events. 1 verse 1, for how long, Yahweh, shall I plead for relief? But you will not actually listen to my genuine and continuous appeal for help. Toward you, there are cruel lies and great injustice, error leading to death and destruction, so you continuously withhold salvation. 1 verse 2, for what reason are you having me witness this evil corruption, wicked injustice, and distressing and miserable situation brought about as a result of considerable labor that you are evaluating and considering? Cruel lies and great injustice are conspicuous to me and are related. So he has been and continues to be contentious, taunting, and quarrelsome, insulting in a dispute, and hostile in opposition, harboring a different perception regarding the proper standard which put God and man in conflict, and also, strife and dissension, even argumentative objections with regard to vindication, he brings, actually lifts up, and continuously advocates. 1 verse 3, so likewise, therefore, based upon this, he consistently incapacitated and genuinely paralyzed the purpose of the Torah, the source from which teaching, instruction, direction, and guidance flows. So he did not bring forth a glorious and eternal approach to vindicate by justly resolving disputes. For indeed, wickedness encompasses and guilt abounds, hemming in the hopeful against the righteous and innocent. So therefore, in this manner, his judgment regarding his ongoing means to vindication is perverted and distorted, twisted and false. 1 verse 4, witness among the Gentiles, observing, considering and evaluating, so as to be astonished and astounded, amazed and surprised that indeed, a work will be done in your days that you will not find credible even when it is written down and he is held accountable. 1 verse 5, rather, look to me, paying attention to me, standing upright, established, and restored against the Chaldeans, a synonym for the Babylonians, the nation of heathens and pagans that is disagreeable and poisonous, impetuous and senseless. He makes his way to the vast expanses of the world as if an inheritance, taking possession of inhabited places that are not his. 1 verse 6, terrible, dreadful, and intimidating. This from his decision, his plan, and lofty status which he brings forth, advances and spreads. 1 verse 7, and they received more swiftly and are despised because they are more vile in the contempt than the dregs of a scummy remainder. His horsepower is as fierce and menacing as wolves, harmful, destructive, and predatory as dust in the darkness of night. His dispersed and fast-running chariots and mobile weaponry come from afar flying and darting, continually and actually hovering about like birds of prey, swooping down to consume and destroy. 1 verse 8, with all of his violent and destruction pursuits, killing without restraint, he eagerly assembles and brings vast hordes. Facing east, he assembles together and then moves like the sand to control other countries and capture territory. 1 verse 9, and he at the king's marks, deriding, and the governor's scoffs in scorn, toward them and to all their fortifications and defenses, he laughs in amusement, piling up rubble, He seizes them. 1 verse 10, then at the time, he will actually go with a new and completely different spirit, exchanging the existing spirit for a totally dissimilar spirit. He will become arrogant, meddling, intoxicating, and alienating. He is totally guilty and will actually suffer punishment, genuinely enduring recompense for his acknowledged offenses. For this is the influence of his God. 1 verse 11, are you not from eternity, an unlimited duration of time, Yahweh, my God, my set-apart one? You cannot die and cannot be killed, Yahweh. Concerning this judgment you have appointed for him, and the rock you have established to argue against and rebuke him, you have positioned, appointed, and ordained to prove that he is wrong, to chide him, accusing and judging him. 1 verse 12, two flawless and clean are eyes to witness such malignant and displeasing evil, to look upon, consider, and evaluate such grievous and perverse labor, the travail of childbirth this painful and full of iniquity, you cannot endure. Why would you look at or consider treacherous betrayal that is neither trustworthy or reliable? You are silent and still, inactive, neither listening, speaking, nor taking action in devouring the wicked more righteous than him. 1 verse 13, so you act and engage with humankind in similar fashion to fish of the sea, as creatures which move freely about without a ruler in control claiming dominion over them. 1 verse 14, in everything associated with him, a fishhook, a small, sharp implement used as a lure to snag, bait, and catch fish, is used to withdraw, and he catches and drags away in nets designed to trap and destroy, and he gathers them, harvesting and removing them in his dragnets. But concerning this, he actually and continually rejoices, and he is glad and exults, shrieking and shouting as if this was favorable and good. 1 verse 15, so therefore in this way, he kills every living thing, slaughtering those approaching and unsnared in his trap. And he blows smoke to elicit worship, fumigating a living space to drive out the occupants for them to move toward his dragnet. For indeed, with them he shared seductive words regarding an easy life without any work, offering a persuasive plot which appears satisfying but is fattening, so that his bread grows. Therefore with him they share the same fate. And so his food is fashioned to be consumed, leading to obesity. 1 verse 16, so how is it that he continues to bring out his sword and unsnaring net, banning and destroying the devoted, only to constantly and continually kill Gentiles, showing no mercy, sparing none while incapable of pity or compassion? 1 verse 17,
I don't suppose that it would be possible for a rational individual who has carefully considered these words to think that this was all about Babylon circa 609 to 538 BC instead of Shaul's ongoing influence commencing in 52 CE. But if you are predisposed to see all of this as God's fixation on the brief and flickering history of the nation of Babylon, a brief history may be in order. In that Chaldea includes Assyria. This story begins with the initial Assyrian conquest of Israel, which was led by Tiglath-Pileser III and Shalmaneser III. It began around 740 BCE, more than a century before this prophecy was written. Sargon II and his son, Sennacherib, completed the 20-year campaign, ending with the captivity and demise of 10 of Israel's 12 tribes. This story is told in 1 Chronicles 5 and 2 Kings 15. By 722 BCE, Samaria was the final northern kingdom city to fall, 2 Kings 17 and 18. Assyrian cuneiform tablets reveal that 27,290 captives were hauled away from Samaria as slaves. Shortly thereafter, with 185,000 Assyrians returning to finish off Yerushalm, the kingdom of Yehuda, King Chizkiah/Hezekiah found a copy of the Torah. After reading it, He decided that destroying all vestiges of religion while observing Passover, unleavened bread, and firstborn children would be the only way to spare the lives of his people. God agreed, killing the assailants instead. But the means to salvation was soon forgotten, and throughout most of the 7th century BCE, Yehudah became a client state of the Assyrian Empire. However, once the Babylonians defeated the Assyrians, Egypt became concerned about its survival and launched a preemptive strike, seizing territory up to the banks of the Euphrates River in Syria. Babylon counterattacked, bringing Yehudah into the fray, killing King Yahshua/Josiah in the Battle of Megiddo in 609 BCE. This was within 5 years of the time Yahweh inspired Chabaquwq to pen this prophecy. Upon losing the battle, Yahudah became a client of Babylon, forging a treaty of alliance in Jerusalem which kept Yahweh sovereign. But just a decade later, Yahudah revolted against Babylon. So in 599 BCE, they picked the fight that ultimately led to their demise, just as Rabbi Akiba and the warlord Bar Kokhba would do in 133 CE, repeating this history with the Romans. As a result, Nebuchadnezzar began the siege of Jerusalem in early 597 BCE, with resistance crumbling a few months later. While the city was not destroyed, it was pillaged and a few prominent Yahudim such as the prophet Yehiel/Ezekiel were taken to Babylon. Then, against the warnings Yahweh made through the prophet Jeremiah, King Zedekiah entered into an alliance with Pharaoh Hapra of Egypt and revolted once more against Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar returned, defeated the Egyptians and laid his sights on Jerusalem, destroying the city wall and the temple. Zedekiah was blinded and taken to Babylon along with many other Yahudim, and Yahudah became the Babylonian province of Yahud-Medinata, the Aramaic word for province, in 587 BCE, briefly losing its sovereignty. But after the fall of Babylon to Persia under the leadership of Cyrus the Great in 538 BCE, the occupiers were gone and the enslaved Yahudim returned to Yahudah to join those who had remained. And that was the end of Babylon, at least as a nation. Its menacing influence over Yahudah lasted less than 50 years. Whereas Shaul's influence is still being felt 1938 years after he penned his first letter. Moreover, when Yahweh had an issue with the Chidian king, he called him out by name. But the only individual named here is Shaul, and no one by that name ever ruled over any Mesopotamian nation. In addition, Yahweh devoted most of Jeremiah, a man much closer to the scene, to presenting his overt condemnation of Babylon. And the prophets Ezekiel, Zephaniah, and Daniel were all better positioned to tell its story. While that was the end of the first chapter of Chabaquwq, as we discovered early in questioning Paul, Yahweh was just getting warmed up. God's haunting prediction regarding Shaul continued by telling us that he isn't about to alter any of the requirements to participate in his covenant or change the approach that he has taken to facilitate our salvation, no matter what Paul has led billions to believe.
Upon my requirements and responsibilities, I have decided I will literally and continually stand. And I will choose to always stand and present myself upon that which protects and fortifies. So then I will be on the lookout in order to see what he will say about me. But then how can I be expected to change my attitude, my thinking, or my response concerning my disapproving rebuke? Habakkuk 2 verse 1.
When God announced that he would be on the lookout for the likes of Shaul, ready in advance to rebuke him for falsely testifying that he had changed his plans, it should have stopped Paul dead in his tracks. No one other than Shaul in all of human history fits this prophecy. He not only tried to change God's requirements for participation in his covenant relationship, he sought to replace God's conditions and provisions with his own. Worse, he claimed to speak for the God he was contradicting and undermining. And that is why Yahweh has infused this prophecy with an affirmation that he isn't going to replace his specific requirements for participating in the covenant with something as nebulous as faith, especially in grace. He isn't going to shirk his own commitment to become the living embodiment of his approach to salvation through his participation in Passover, unyeasted bread, firstborn children, or the promise of the Sabbath. Life was conceived in the real world by the one and only real God. His one and only covenant was affirmed in the same corporeal realm, its conditions and benefits written down and communicated to us in the flesh, with Yahweh providing his guidance in his Torah. And so God became corporeal, the living manifestation of his Torah, to fulfill his promises in the flesh. This is God's accounting, and it is wholly different than the Gnostic agenda that permeates Paul's letters.
Then Yahweh answered, approaching me, and he said, write this revelation, and then expound upon and reiterate it using those letters upon writing tablets so that, by reciting this, he might run and go away. Habakkuk 2 verse 2.
The lines of demarcation are clear, and the consequence of being deceived are severe, so Yahweh left little doubt regarding this man, naming him as we shall soon see, in this prophecy. And let's be clear. This entire prediction has been positioned against one solitary man, which is why he is deployed throughout using the third person masculine singular. While a handful of individuals have earned a rebuke of this magnitude, only one man meets all of the criterion that has been provided, and he is a perfect fit, right down to his propensities, peculiarities, and personal and proper name. Shaul deceived billions during the mode, meeting times. He was in Jerusalem, studying to be a rabbi, when Yahusha was fulfilling the mode microly, invitations to be called out and meet with God, and as a rabbi, he did an about-face to attack God from an entirely new direction. Shaul even admitted to being conceited, to being demon-possessed, to being preoccupied with Gentiles and circumcision, things which will enlarge in a moment. Since it would be 6 centuries before Shaul would question God's word, earning his disapproval, Yahweh encouraged those who first read these words to be patient. This warning was for another day.
Still indeed, this revelation from God is for the mode appointed meeting times. It provides a witness to and speaks, pouring out evidence in the end. The extended period of time required for this question to be resolved shall not prove it false. Expect him in this regard, because indeed, he will absolutely come, neither being delayed nor lingering. Habakkuk 2 verse 3.
The first four mode, meeting times, Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim, and Shavuot, were fulfilled by Yahusha and the set-apart spirit in year 4000 yen, more commonly known as 33 CA. They enabled the covenant's promises and our salvation. Shaul was in Jerusalem at this time training to be a rabbi. Shortly thereafter, he began undermining the mode, beginning with this letter around 52 CA. So I find it interesting that now, in 2013, just 20 years shy of Yahweh's return, we are finally studying this prophecy and identifying it with Shaul. Better late than never. And speaking of late, can you imagine God telling a prophet just a handful of years removed from the Babylonian conflict? This revelation is for the appointed meeting time. It provides a witness to and speaks in the end. The extended period of time required for this question to be resolved shall not prove it false. Since that approach would be utterly absurd, this was not about what was going to occur in 6 years, from 615 to 609 BCE, but instead in 666 years, in 52 CE. Lest I forget, Yahweh loves to provide hints which facilitate understanding among those who are observant. The Mahat question to be resolved was to Shaul, question him. If you think about it, you will come to realize that God has to be a bit coy. If he had written 100 years before the classical Hellenistic period or the Roman Republic had begun, that a religion named Christianity, as a transliteration of a Greek word for drugged, would sweep like a virus throughout the Roman world as a result of some letters scribed by a Jewish man who changed his Hebrew name from Shaul to the Roman, Paulos, beginning in year 52 CE, in a calendar that had not yet been invented, By providing such specificity and making it easily accessible, he would have negated the validity of the prediction, assuring that it would no longer occur. So while God provided copious and convincing clues as to the identity, character, scheme, and consequence of the perpetrator, only those who treasure Yahweh's word sufficiently to closely examine and carefully consider what he had to say become sufficiently informed to understand. This is the same approach he has taken with all of his end times prophecies. They are all there for the taking, but most of the fruit is out of the reach of those bowing down to false gods. As bad as this has been thus far for Paul and Christianity, it is about to get much worse. What follows strongly suggests that Yahweh is directly responding to what Shaul would later write in the letters that now dominate the Christian New Testament. Above all else, this wannabe apostle was egotistical and irrational.
Pay attention, he will be puffed up with false pride. His soul, it is not right nor straightforward in him. So then through trust and reliance, those who are righteous and vindicated shall live. Habakkuk 2 verse 4.
While narrowing in on Shaul in the first stanza, in the second, Yahweh reminds us that vindication and life everlasting come to those who trust and rely on his firmly established and always dependable testimony. This is and always has been the antidote for religion, especially Paul's faith. In Galatians 3 verse 11, in the midst of his initial assault against the Torah, Shaul misquoted this verse, the very one which condemns him for mocking God, removing it from its context and truncating it. He used his perverted variation to promote his faith.
But because with regard to the Torah absolutely no one is vindicated or justified by God becomes evident because those who are vindicated and righteous out of faith will live.
As is often the tendency of a daredevil when faced with the specter of death, Shaul was so transfixed by this damning and deadly prophecy regarding him, he cited it once more, this time at the beginning of his most famous letter.
For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from belief to belief, as it has been written, but the righteous shall live by belief. Romans 1 verse 17.
Shaul and Satan were taunting God in this way, their collective arrogance is unmatched. Moving on, there are six specific details in this next prophetic statement from Yahweh, all of which implicate Shaul 666 years before he incriminated himself. But one clue in particular removes any doubt about whom God is warning us because Yahweh identifies his foe by his personal and proper name. If you are a Christian, you may want to pay attention to this.
Moreover, because the intoxicating wine and inebriating spirit of the man of deceptive infidelity and treacherous betrayal is a high-minded moral failure, he will not rest, find peace, nor live. Whomever is open to the broad path associated with Shaul, he and his soul are like the plague of death, and so those who are brought together by him, accepting him will never be satisfied. Most every Gentile will gather together unto him, all of the people from different races and nations. Habakkuk 2 verse 5.
The oldest extant copy of this text from the caves above Qumran also infers that he cannot be satisfied. This reveals that Shaul, like all chronically insecure megalomaniacs, is never satisfied. There is never enough adulation or prestige, never enough power or devotees. This thought is then carried into the text of the next verse. And speaking of the Dead Sea Scrolls, most of Chabaqwq is extant, including a specific reference to Shaul. His identification cannot, therefore, be dismissed to subsequent scribal exuberance. In 1 Corinthians 11 verses 20-21, Shaul/Paulus tells those who have joined his assembly not to participate in Passover, which is the ultimate plague of death, and not to drink wine in association with it, which thereby nullifies the symbolism associated with the blood of the Passover lamb. This serves as a treacherous betrayal of Yahweh's instructions regarding the narrow path he provided to salvation. Attacking the heart of Yahweh's plan in this way is the epitome of presumptuousness and immorality. Those who ascribe to such lies die. Those who promote it will find themselves in Sheol along with Sheol. And yet, Pauline doctrine is popular, providing those who are open to it, man's broadest path to destruction. Yahusha, himself, picks up on this same theme, saying that the popular and broad path away from the Torah leads to death and destruction. He offered this affirmation of Yahweh's prophecy at the outset of his instruction on the Mount, so it is hard to miss. Sheol promises the gift of life, but his religion, the most popular ever conceived, is the plain of death. Sheol promises heavenly rewards to those who place their faith in his gospel of grace, and yet those intoxicated by this myth will never be satisfied. They will remain estranged from God because, unlike Yahweh's assurances in the Torah, Sheol's hollow promises will go unfulfilled. And that means that the people Sheol claimed as his own, the Gentiles, individuals from many different races and places, will suffer the consequence of his New Testament. Even if Sheol had not been condemned by name, with the specter of the Gentiles being raised twice, it's hard to miss the Pauline fixation on the ethnos, races, throughout his letters. Pauline doctrine has influenced more people and more places in this world than any other corruption of Yahweh's testimony. And the means to this madness is consistent with Yahweh's prophecy, in that Paul egotistically and irrationally claimed that God had authorized him to alter the requirements upon which Yahweh had already taken his stand regarding eternal life. In spite of the fact that Sheol means question him, nary a Christian considers the irresolvable conflicts between Paul's letters and God's word. So while the following continues to identify the culprit, most Christians remain oblivious to Yahweh's prophecy regarding them or him.
They do not ask questions, any of them, about him. Terse references to the word they lift up as taunts to ridicule, along with elusive sayings and mocking interpretations. There are odd and perplexing questions which need to be asked of him. And they should say, "Woe to the one who claims to be great so as to increase his offspring, acting like a rabbi," neither of which apply to him. For how long will they make pledges based upon his significance? Habakkuk 2 verse 6.
The Qumran witness does not include the phrase ad mathai, for how long, before the last sentence, turning a rhetorical question into a simple statement of fact. It then becomes,
"They continue to make pledges based upon his significance."
End of part 2.